Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your window into everything new and noteworthy in the world of food. I'm your host, Kara Vroda. Our guest today is Susan Hand Shetterly, author of Seaweed Chronicles, A World at the Water's Edge. Thank you so much for joining us, Susan.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So first, tell us, why should we be thinking more about seaweed, and how did you decide to write this book?
Well, I think we should be thinking more about seaweed because we've depleted a lot of our fisheries in our oceans. And it's about time that we start thinking about our oceans differently. And I think that seaweed is a good place to start. But I live in Maine, where the seaweed culture has just taken off in the last couple of years. And there's a lot of interest in aquaculture, in growing seaweed for foods. And there's a lot of interest in how to manage industrial seaweed cutting here to make sure that there are protections for wildlife, as well as a good harvest for coastal people who need to make a living. And these are coastal people who have lost jobs due to the diminishment of our fisheries. And I think this is going on, frankly, in many places in the world. I consider myself an essayist, and I was going over a list of essays with my wonderful agent, and she was very quiet on the other end of the phone, which meant, of course, that she wasn't terribly excited about what she was hearing. And then I said, and I know a seaweed harvester, and I'm going to go out in a boat, we're going to cut kelp together. And she said, why don't you write a whole book about seaweed? And I thought, you couldn't write a whole book about seaweed. There isn't that much to say about it. And I was so wrong, because I really think I could sit down when I recover from this book and write another book about seaweed. There are a lot of things I haven't covered. It's really, because it's habitat and because it is so basic and so filled with such a degree of nutrients, it is good for both people and wildlife.
So let's talk about seaweed harvesting and kind of why we harvest seaweed, other than some of the food sources we might be aware of, like sushi. What is seaweed used for, and where do you find it?
Well, there are three kinds of seaweed. One is the green seaweeds, and they're highest on the shore. Then there are the brown seaweeds. They're sort of mid-tide. And then there are the red seaweeds, and those can live with just little flickers of light much more deeply in the water. And seaweed can be harvested. People here do it locally for gardens, for food. Sheep eat seaweed. People keep sheep out on islands, and when the tide goes out, the sheep go clatter along the ledges, and they go and eat kelps, and then when the tide comes in, they go to the top of the island and chew their cud. We use them in so many food. We use seaweed extracts in some yogurts and soy milk, in some tofu and cottage cheese, in puddings, in toothpaste, in lipstick. And the other kinds of gels are used in petri dishes for laboratory tissue cultures, so they're helping us with experiments on how to make ourselves more healthy. And they're used in wound dressing, in textile printing, and they're even used in fracking because the fluids in the gels keep the machinery smooth.
So seaweed is definitely a part of our lives in more ways than we even know. But how does seaweed help us think about the health of our natural environment? Why is it so interconnected to different environments, and why does it have this global significance?
Well, it's habitat. You know, if you eat all the codfish and take them all out of the Gulf of Maine, which actually has happened, they are commercially extinct right now. That's one species of fish, and you're probably affecting other species of fish. But when you hit habitat, you are really hitting the thing that if we save it, and if we change some of our other policies, we'll actually help all the other thing, all the other lives that have been extirpated return, if that's at all possible. In other words, you don't want to lose habitat. And so it has to be harvested carefully. And the in Maine, we're talking about that. The there are laws that are going to be applied to harvesters. There's some minimal laws now, but they're going to be more. And we're talking about conservation areas as well. And what kind of animals in the shore, what kind of birds, periwinkles, scuds, crabs, use seaweed and how they use them.
So we're needing to think about seaweed conservation as it's such an important part of our environment and creates a home for so many other species. But also at this time, chefs and scientists and businesses are noticing how many applications seaweed has. So what's happening now in the seaweed industry and what ecologically friendly solutions do you point towards?
Well, you're right. It's a push and pull right now. But here in the Gulf of Maine, now, my book is really takes stories from all over the world. But here in the Gulf of Maine, the interesting thing is this. We really haven't done much harvesting of seaweed. It's all of a sudden become an important thing. And so we know we've lost enough fisheries, and we can't lose anything more. So the population in Maine, the lives along the coast, is very aware of the seaweed harvest and the need to conserve, only because we haven't done it in the past. And so it's the way working out of how to supply seaweed for people and keep an environment that can keep growing seaweed for wildlife and for people is something that is now in the mix. One way to do it is through aquaculture, and small, independently owned aquaculture projects are starting up in bays along the coast, and they're very exciting. They're independently owned. They're put in the water in the fall. They raise the seaweed in the winter. The seaweed is harvested in the early spring, and then lobster boats go out and catch lobsters. I mean, in other words, you could be a lobster person and a seaweed harvester, because they are in different seasons. And that is used for food, that kind of harvest. That is not industrial harvest. The industrial harvest of the seaweeds along the shore, close to the shore, are used out in the Midwest as soil amendments, are used out in California and in New York State to supplement the grape plants used to make wine. And we're exporting a lot of our seaweeds to places that use them and are very grateful for them. But of course, we can't export too much.
Before we continue, a quick word from our podcast sponsor. Are you looking for an easy way to batch cook healthy food at home? Whether you're cooking chicken, seafood, veggies, or anything else, Joule Sous Vide is the tool for you. Joule heats food to the exact right temperature and then holds it there so it's hot and ready to serve whenever you're ready to eat. There's no guesswork and nothing is ever over or undercooked. Whether you're making chicken for two or pulled pork for 20, the process is easy and reliable. You can even save time by cooking right from frozen. Drop vacuum-sealed frozen protein right into the pot. There's no need to defrost. Joule is small and mighty, so you can cook a lot at once. If you can fit it in a cooler, you can cook it with one Joule. Need inspiration? Cook from over 100 step-by-step recipes in the Joule app. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/Joule and use the code CLEVER, all lowercase, to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/JOULE, code CLEVER. The code is case sensitive, so be sure to type lowercase C-L-E-V-E-R. Jewel, perfect food every time. When you were in the process of researching this book and exploring the seaweed industry in so many different places, what were some of the more surprising stories that you heard?
Well, here's a surprising story. There is a specific population of orcas along the Northern California coast and out along Southeast Alaska. And they, after many years, they began to figure out that they're taking otters because they're hungry and there isn't enough food for them. And this is causing a ripple effect because the otters eat the sea urchins that eat the seaweeds. So when the otters are wiped out of an area, the sea urchins, which are these echinoderms like starfish, they begin to eat away at the seaweeds. And those seaweeds along the northern coast of California and up into southern Alaska are life-giving forests. I mean, they're equivalent of the great redwood forests and things. And now without the otters to eat the urchins to protect the seaweed, some of the rocks are going bare. And it took years to figure out why the otters were disappearing again. They used to disappear, and they were almost completely wiped out by trapping. And so there's a lot of work to bring them back, and now they're being wiped out by hungry orcas. And the reason that orcas are hungry, are you still with me here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is because... During World War II, or right after, Europe, Japan were so hungry that there was a lot of killing of baleen whales to feed people who had just been through a war and had nothing. And this particular group of orcas, there are three separate groups and they behave differently. This particular group of orcas were the whale killers, and they were the ones who would, when the baleen whales migrated up the coast, would take a few and kill them together like a wolf pack, and they didn't have them anymore because they've come back so slowly.
So these are really complicated and gradual environmental and natural relationships that change over time, and it can take such a long time to even figure out the influence of different flora and fauna in these systems, let alone make sure we're preserving them correctly.
Absolutely. I mean, it is Sherlock Holmes' endeavor to be a biologist, a scientist, trying to figure some of these things out. Right.
So what do you see as the near-term future for seaweed, some of the things that are on the cutting edge of developments and how we use it, and also some of the plans for making sure that we're harvesting it responsibly?
Well, as I say, I really think that the people, so many of people want to do it well, and that's exciting. The second thing is this whole idea of aquaculture, which takes pressure off the wild seaweed. The minute you're growing it in aquacultural farms, the pressure's off a little bit. And so they're experimenting with growing seaweed and growing oysters or clams or mussels right along with them. And here's the neat thing. Both of those things, the seaweeds, which are algae, and the bivalves, clean the water. They take in nutrients from the water, but they don't cause any kind of pollution. Whereas if you were raising a pen full of salmon, you'd be putting in antibiotics, feed, a whole bunch of things to make sure the fish are healthy and well, and what comes, floats off in the water is not clean, is not healthy. And so seaweeds and shellfish go perfectly together, and people are experimenting with that, and I love it. I think it's terrific.
Well, Susan, it's such a fascinating book, and it really unpacks a lot about the world of seaweed that people don't know and don't understand why it's so relevant. So thank you for sharing this amazing information with us.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Check out the book, Seaweed Chronicles, A World at the Water's Edge, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for everything new and noteworthy in the world of food.